This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Nick Dabino joining me here in the studio ahead of another busy program. There's plenty to get through, especially the Women's World Cup. What a win by the Matildas over Jamaica. We'll get to that in a minute. We will be joined by SBS's commentator over there, David Bashir, a little bit later on in the program. Stick around. He'll be joining us at 5:20 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And then we will also go through everything else that's going on at the moment, because it isn't just the Women's World Cup. It is also Copa America time. We've got a lot of transfer news and everything else that's going on in the world. But Nick joins me here in the studio. Nick, did you watch the game this morning?
Sure did. Very pleased that they were able to get the job done. It wasn't, look, everyone looks at the result and you might look at it when you see it on paper and you might think 4-1, great win, but there's still a lot of problems that need to be addressed before the round of 16. Don't get me wrong, Sam Kerr scoring 4 goals and the Matildas going out and getting goals on the board is fantastic. They didn't finish third, which means that they don't get as hard of an opponent that maybe Brazil will get. But then again, though, it's not like you finish first and you get the opportunity to be, I wouldn't say on the good side of the draw, but you get an easier run potentially to the final. So, look, regardless of it, there are still glaring issues at the back, and we'll talk about that one a little bit later. But we've got to talk about Sam Kerr, because that was absolutely tremendous. First Australian to score a hat-trick at the World Cup, and not just hat-trick, 4 goals and 4 of the best. And they were tested in a key point in time. She had them up 2-0. They were pegged back, and then they were able to score 2 in that second half and get the job done.
Yes, and just amazing stuff from Sam Kerr. 4 goals, as you say, the first ever Australian to score 4 goals in a World Cup match. Simply outstanding. We also must pay tribute to Lisa Devanna, the veteran forward who made her 150th cap for the country. She is just one shy of beating Cheryl Salisbury, who is currently the all-time record holder for most caps for Australian women players. So I think Lisa might be really close to doing that in the next couple of games.
Yeah, well, if they play another 2 games, if they get past the round of 16, bearing that she plays in the round of 16, then obviously they play in a quarterfinal and she gets out in the field, then she will obviously be the record holder. I think that probably hoping that she can definitely do it by the end of this tournament.
And another amazing feat is young Carly Rosbacken, who's just 18 and was able to make her Matilda's starting debut. What an amazing time for her.
Yeah, it's good to see Carly got that opportunity in left back. Obviously, with injuries, that's opens up the door for other players. And she was a late inclusion into the Matilda squad full stop when Laura Alloway went down. So with Claire Polkinghorne, we don't know her status at the moment. She's a bit 50-50 about whether she's going to be back for the round of 16. We're hoping that she's fit. It might mean that Carly has to play again in left back due to Steph Catley, in particular, having to slot over into the heart of defence. I still think, though, that's a weak spot, because I still think, as much as Carly's performed quite admirably well, I thought she's been fantastic, at the end of the day, you need to have your best four out there. And I think if you have Claire Polkinghorne back into centre back and potentially allowing Steph Catley to go into left back, you have your best four out there, and they're coming up against a Norway team that do attack. They're going to put pressure on them and they've got to get the job done. So at the end of the day, yep, good to see she got out there, but what we want the Matildas as well is their best back four. But I think it's good as well that if got later in the tournament and say Claire Polkinghorne broke down, there was a suspension, whatever else, we know we've got someone that can come in and play that role, because obviously, as we do know as well, we want Steph Catley in her most natural position too, because she's one of the best left backs in the world. So look, there's a lot of things I think falling into place so they can get Polkinghorne in there. It's just about finding the best starting 11 from now on in.
Yes, and as you touch on, there have been quite a few injuries. Hopefully Claire will be fit for the next game against Norway. And more importantly, as the Matildas start to head deeper into the tournament, you want, you know, the most experienced players out on the pitch. But as you touch on, it's also really positive that Ante Milicic has given Carly her starting berth. And now, I would say, even gotten rid of some of the nerves, the initial nerves. So if they do need to call on her later on in the tournament, they can do so. And we know that, you know, she's able to step up.
Yeah, well, there's also going to be questions about changes in general heading into that Norway game, with Elise Callan-Knight was benched for this game. She didn't start, and they did go with Katrina Gorry in midfield. I thought she played quite well. Lisa Devanna came into the starting 11 for Caitlin Ford. Whether one or maybe two of them get recalled is another question, as we did say, with Claire Polkinghorne as well. Could very well come into the back four. We saw Avi Lewitt get her first minutes of the tournament, and Hayley Razzo and Ford both came off the bench. So, look, if I was to look at this lineup, I still believe that EKK should be starting in the middle of the park. I'd like to see her playing potentially the Van Egmond role.
We haven't seen that yet.
No,
and everyone
haven't.
Is dying to see that. Well, I know I am.
Well, I know there's all...
I speak on behalf of you.
It seems like it happens a lot in international tournaments, where there's always one or two players that we want to see get chances to play, don't seem to get out there. And I think that maybe, unless Milicic sees something we don't, that Van Egmond's providing. But then again, though, her delivery in terms of her passing and everything hasn't been too great over the past three games. I don't mean to criticise too much, but I'd like to see Callan Knight be recalled into that starting 11 and potentially playing in that midfield alongside Legazzo and Gorry. Devanna starting on the left-hand side, I think it's not too bad. I think that it's an okay move, but I think as a player coming off the bench, I would probably prefer her playing that sort of role, maybe Ford or Razzo
as
starting.
As an impact player.
Impact player, I think, suits Devanna now, considering her age and considering the way that front three is and the dynamics of everything else. Josh Parrish always says that he thinks Sam Kerr should almost be shifted out to that left-hand side where she plays regularly, or out in the wing for Perth Glory in the W League, and maybe start Caitlin Ford through the middle, or Devanna, whoever it might be. That's certainly an option too.
And we haven't seen Ante Milicic use her out wide yet.
No, we haven't.
Where she's, as you say...
We've scored five goals now, so I don't know if he'll be tempted to do that.
Well, that's right. And she's capable of doing many things now. And we see her domestically starting out wide because she does love to run at goal rather than have her back to goal and score. But, you know, I guess that also plays into her versatility, and maybe that could be explored in the latter stages of the knockout
rounds. Well, considering her size as well, being able to score those headers too, unbelievable she was able to.
And one just missed. She could have had another one.
Yeah, well, she could have had five. And you know what? It goes to show the quality of the player she is. She's arguably the best women's player in the world, and rightfully so. She's an absolute talent. She's so small, but she's so dynamic, able to get herself in good positions all the time. It just showed that with the four goals that she scored, she was able to get in those areas and put pressure on the Jamaican defense. End of the day, though, if you've got a player like that, doesn't matter how, if you're not playing at your best, whatever else, just you got that presence inside the box, it's always going to serve you well. And Sam Kerr now is a tie with Alex Morgan at the top of the Golden Boot race at the moment with five goals each. Alex Morgan hasn't played her third game yet, but I think that these two will definitely be going neck and neck for the remainder of the tournament to see literally how, well, it'll be interesting to see if that, depending on how well they go, because obviously there's like Carly Lloyd, et cetera, up there as well. It's going to be an interesting race for that Golden Boot, considering there's been a lot of goals so far this tournament.
Let's hope that Sam Kerr can take it out.
Well, exactly right. And look, I was just interesting stuff about Sam Kerr. Last night there was a special on, and surprisingly enough, she was actually speaking on Foxtel and Fox Footy, speaking about her relationship on a show called Bob. So she was talking about her relationship with her brother Daniel, who's a former AFL star, and talking about how her rift with her brother almost got her to where it is, and the silent treatment that happened between there helped her obviously get herself right and everything else with her relationship with him. And spoke about, obviously, about, because we saw Daniel a few days ago chugging a beer in celebration of Sam Kerr scoring and having a great tournament, wearing the Suck on That t-shirt. And it's really interesting and candid interview, because Sam Kerr spoke a lot about how when she was younger she had an ACL injury too, and the ACL injury she had almost spurred her on to be at the level she is. She wanted to be the best, and she said that she wanted to get her body right, wanted to trim some kilos, wanted to get herself into the best shape possible. And she was about 18, 19 at the time, and she had this remarkable transformation. And what she was able to do is she watched as her other teammates and her mates from Australia and all around the world were going in these tournaments, playing international football, and she was becoming envious, was firing her up. Next minute, it just seems like something snapped, and she became this unbelievable player now than what we see in Sam Kerr. I think it's a really good interview. If you guys have any opportunity to catch this interview, it'll probably be on the Fox Sports website. There might be some snippets, or if you guys have Foxtel, I'm sure there'll be replays all throughout the week. Make sure you catch it. And look, it's great to see, because she's mended her family relationships with her brother Daniel, but also then in terms of getting her body right, we see the player she is now, and I reckon it's absolutely unbelievable.
It is. Sam Kerr has now scored 36 international goals, and no doubt that will keep climbing over the next couple of days. And we touch on the fact that the Matildas will be playing Norway in their next match. That'll be on Sunday at 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. But, Nick, we did hear from Sam Kerr after the game. Let's take a listen as to what she had to say. And remember, you can get involved at any time. Give us a call on 03 9944 9999, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. If you do want to get involved, I will read out as many comments as I can throughout the next couple of minutes. But let's go to Sam first.
Sam, an unbelievable match right here, and in the end you got the result that you needed.
Yeah, a win was really important for us today, and you know, we weren't too pleased with our first half, but a win's a win, and that's what we needed to build our confidence going into the next round.
Congratulations on that qualification and on an unbelievable individual performance. 4 goals in a World Cup, that's just unimaginable.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling, obviously scoring my first goal in the World Cup against Italy, and yeah, to do this, but it was a team effort. You know, it wasn't just about me today, and it was a team effort. That's what's got us through to the next round.
Well, currently there's a few seconds left in the other match, but you see it in second place and you're set to travel to Nice to face Norway. How do you feel about that one?
Yeah, I've heard Nice is beautiful, so I'm excited. And, you know, we're confident in whoever we play, and just got to rest up, recover, and, yeah, get ready for the next game.
Sam Kerr chatting after the game. The star, she scored all 4 goals for Australia and made some records at that.
She sure did. And Louise, I've actually got some breaking news coming through just now from ftbl.com.au. Jason Davidson has officially left Perth Glory and has joined Olsen Hyundai in the K-League for next season. Obviously, FTBL understands that Davidson is set to depart and will sign for Ulsan immediately on a multi-year deal. They've paid a transfer fee to get him across. So after one season at the Glory, Davidson is back off again, heading over to Korea.
Wow.
Yeah, sort of come a bit of left field.
Very left field. And we know that Jacob Italiano has also left.
Yep.
So maybe they'll need to start refilling.
Well,
left back's
a position where there's not many players out there that they'd be available if they're looking locally, or if they want to maybe look to bring through one of the young guys they've got. They might look to maybe get someone in overseas, maybe an international player of some sort of caliber. But it'll be interesting to see how the Glory replace Davidson, who was arguably the best left back this year.
Mm. Nick, we might take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be chatting to David Bashir.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Nick Dabino joining me here in the studio. And one of the other games in Group C was Italy, who took on Brazil. Marta actually made history as she scored a record 17th World Cup goal to seal a 1-0 win for Brazil over the Italians.
Beatrice just ahead of her. Dabina racing hard. Challenge from Linari. It's a penalty. Foul by Elena Linari. Marta makes it 1-0. 17 goals in 19 appearances at World Cup finals. Was there ever any...
With thanks to Optusport for those goals, yes. Regardless, though, Brazil did win the game, but Italy tops the group after a 20-year absence.
Great to see Italy get the job done at the end of the day with that group. Obviously got through on goals scored. They will find out their fate, who they will take on in a couple days' time once all the groups have gone through. Brazil are still waiting to know whether they'll be going through. I think that 6 points should be enough, and they'll be in a good position as probably one of the better-ranked third-place teams to go through to the next stage. But good result at the end of the day for Brazil. They needed to get that win and get the job done. And all three of those teams ending up on 6 points, I think, is well-deserved.
How much of that momentum can Italy use to go further into the competition? And how far do you think that they will go now?
Italy can go as deep as I reckon they could honestly go all the way to the Final Four. No reason why not. This team is a really, really solid team that I think is still very much criminally underrated. We have seen how well they've played all tournament, and probably we're very unlucky not to at least get a draw this morning. We must remember Brazil are a very, very good side, and Italy have shown that their counter-attacking brand of football that is very quick will frustrate teams. And it doesn't matter if they play China or Nigeria in the next round. They're going to put themselves in a really good place because their side of the draw shapes up that they might play the Netherlands or Canada. as one of the teams potentially from that in that quarterfinal. And then that's when it gets difficult because they might have to play Germany or the US in the semis. But I reckon that's a pretty good run all the way through to the semifinals, and we could see Italy there. But I reckon quarterfinals at a minimum and potentially semis at a max. Final might be a step too far for them.
It would be such an interesting tie to see Italy come up against the likes of the Netherlands, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I reckon it'd be a really exciting game. Mind you, I think that it'd be good to see Italy, first of all, play against one of China or Nigeria in the next round. I reckon that will be quite exciting to see how that game plays out. Just looking at who Brazil could play, Brazil will either play France or they will play Germany in the round of 16, which saves up as a huge, huge matchup.
And that's why Ante Milicic wanted the team to score more goals this morning.
Exactly.
So we
right.
could avoid third place.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously they got the job done. They were able to get that game against Norway. And look, we'll look at Norway a little bit later on, but they're in a really good position at the moment. They were very good in the group stage and came through in second in Group A.
And also, let's pay tribute to Marta. 17 goals, a record for any World Cup. And that's just pretty amazing because she has now beaten Miroslav Klose's haul of 16.
Yeah, so good to see that Marta's been able to break that. And I think that she could very well add to that in the next few games. Whether Brazil can go deep into this tournament is a whole other question considering where they're based. And, you know, they're sort of in a bit of a pickle at the moment because they've got themselves coming up against some really top quality opposition due to that third place finish. But Marta's got all the talents to potentially build on that.
And her team as well. You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Louise Taffer with Nick Dabano joining me here in the studio. And it's time to cross to SBS's World Cup commentator, David Bashir. David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Louise. How are you going?
We're great. What a game this morning. Sam Kerr became the first Australian to score four goals in a FIFA World Cup match. How was it to see it in the flesh?
It was a pretty remarkable match for many reasons. But, you know, Australia didn't have their difficulties. They had issues early in the second half. But Sam Kerr's individual performance was just breathtaking, really. She was just in the zone from the opening whistle and you know, the two assists in the first half of her goals were outstanding, Emily Gilnick and also Katrina Gorry. So, you know, from that point of view, very, very positive. But you're still seeing this team developing defensively. They dropped their guard and a very athletic Jamaica, you know, pushed them early in the second half. So as we move forward to the round of 16 in Norway, certainly there's things for Ante Milicic to ponder, but overall a very positive result, you know, considering they lost their opening game to Italy and all the pressure associated with that and you know, coming back from 2-0 down against Brazil, it's been quite an eventful group stage for them.
David, it's Nick here, and as you did say, there are those weaknesses in defence and particularly in transition. They've been opened up quite a few times this tournament. Can you see Norway really pinpointing that as the main weakness where they might look to penetrate the Matildas in the round of 16?
Yeah, g'day, Nick. I think that's a real possibility. They're probably less athletic but more predictable than Jamaica. You know, they had a really good result. Nigeria pushed France in their last group game and Norway cleaned up Nigeria in the opening game. They probably played their best match against France in the second groups phase when they were really, really good. They should have probably got something out of that match. So they are, you know, they're a thoroughly decent team. Of course, without their superstar, Arda Hegerberg, who, you know, obviously for principled reasons is not playing at this World Cup. And, you know, many people agree with her stand, but it's a real pity that she's not here. Norway are a really solid team. Defensively, they're strong. They have got outlets. Hansen and Herlovsen are really good players. And Utland and Raithen, they can create. They're not as dynamic as, you know, as Jamaica or maybe technically as savvy as Italy, perhaps. But they sort of sit in the middle somewhere. And I think they'll give Australia trouble. But, you know, Australia's got a short turnaround too, just, what, three full days to recover before Nice. So it's going to be a real test for them.
And, David, you were in the press conference after the game. What did Ante Milicic have to say?
Look, he was realistic about it. He was proud of the effort that the team put in. Obviously, you know, in awe of Sam Kerr, in a sense that, you know, he just thinks that she's a terrific leader and leads by example. You know, he definitely highlighted the positives, Luis, but he also, you know, looked ahead to some of the bigger nations and what they could face in the World Cup and realises this team is very much a work in progress. Remember, they copped Laura Alloway before the World Cup, you know, with an injury. Carly Rosbach and on her starting debut last night, I thought was very, very good, you know, for an 18-year-old to come in under that type of pressure against wingers from Jamaica who are very quick and tricky and dangerous. I think she did well. But Australia's been stretched. Steph Catley's had to play the centre-back role, you know, with Alana Kennedy. So there's been issues with fitness and not much first-team football for players like Kellen Knight and Katrina Gorrie and so forth. So I think physically the squad is stretched. Whether they can hold together for Norway, I hope that's the case. They certainly have a lot of self-belief. They've got the quality to beat Norway. It's whether physically they can back up after 3 days.
And David, you did say obviously there's that short turnaround and there were a few changes this morning to the starting 11. Can you see there being a few for the game against Norway, potentially with Polkinghorne maybe returning to that back four?
Yeah, and he made point of that in the press conference, saying that Polkinghorne put in a pretty solid training session the morning of the match, knowing she was not in the match day squad. So I think she'll come back. If she continues to impress, I think she'll come back. I think Kellen Knight will start. They'll rotate their lineup. You know, Caitlin Ford had that sort of first half breather. She's got through a lot of work, but she'll be right for the match. It's whether that Emily Van Egmond, who's had a lot of football of recent times, or, you know, even Alana Kennedy. I think Alana Kennedy's fine, but, you know, they've had a huge workload to these players, and some have not been playing for their clubs in the United States. So it's certainly a squad that will be stretched. I hope we see Mary Fowler at some stage. It would be a pity if the World Cup went without seeing her abilities, but I think last night probably wasn't the time to bring her in. In the second half, you needed that thrust from Rasso and Ford, and they were good substitutions.
And speaking of forwards, Lisa Devanna made her 150th cap for Australia. What an achievement.
It's tremendous, and she's, what, one cap off Cheryl Salisbury now and three goals off Tim Cahill as our greatest ever senior goal scorer. You know, she's not gliding past players like she used to. She's probably not going to see 90 minutes out in any match at this World Cup. But what she did give Australia early doors in the match against Jamaica was, was a sense of belief and a sense of experience going forward. I think the other wing with Emily Gilnick has been really a very good player against, you know, Brazil. And in the first half, her first half against Jamaica was really, really impressive. So I think from that point of view, Lisa Devanna's very much a pinch hitter now. She'll start a match but won't finish it, and she'll come off the bench and do some damage. But it's been a great career. You know, she's looking to score her fourth consecutive World Cup. I hope she does it, and I hope she gets the caps record and the goal-scoring record as well.
David, as a whole, how have you rated this tournament so far? It's been very exciting, a lot of goals so far. You've been there, obviously, in France. How have you rated it over there?
It's been really good atmosphere. Some cities, Nick, have embraced it a lot more than others, which has been a bit disappointing given the fact, obviously, France are going to play in front of full houses. That's for sure and certain. But the other nations, because they're pushing it out to some of the regional areas of France, some of the attendances have been disappointing. I think the standard of football, good matches have been really good. And we've seen some, you know, substandard matches, and that's, you know, to be expected at a men's and women's World Cup. But overall, I think as we get to the 16s and the quarters and the semis, and we get to Lyon, which is the spiritual home of football in France, we'll see the crowds swell. Obviously, when the United States, France, Australia, Germany, those type of teams play, even Italy now, you're seeing a good quality of football, and I just hope that continues, and I hope the squad stay together, you know, injury-wise for the remainder of the tournament.
And, David, how far do you think the Matildas can go after seeing the past couple of games in the group stage and also, you know, having identified some of their, you know, weaknesses that they need to build on?
I think they can beat Norway, there's no doubt. I think if you want to put a percentage on it, it was probably would be 50-50 split. You know, on a given day, they're a better team than Norway. Norway are probably stronger and they've got less injury concerns. And that's a factor. You know, when you get into tournament football, that's always a factor. So I think it's a 50-50 split. If we win, then, you know, we're likely to play either England or Japan in the quarterfinals. Now, England, I think, have been... they haven't matched their hype at this tournament, so they're beatable. Japan, we've got at a stage where they are rebuilding. You know, they don't have the golden generation of the last two World Cups. So, you know, if we can get through Norway, which is a tricky assignment, I think, you know, we're a chance... We're a really good chance to get to a semi-final.
And what's been the highlight for you so far, even if it's any other games that you've seen?
You just broke up there, Louise. I think you said, is there any other matches I've seen? We saw the France, we called the France-South Korea match at the Parc des Princes, the opening match of the tournament, and that was terrific. I saw Canada play New Zealand the other day in Grenoble, and that was a interesting match. It was more a grind than a spectacle, really. But obviously, wherever we can, we will grab, you know, after the Australian training session, you know, the SBS crew will find a restaurant and a screen and watch as much football as we can. It's been a bit of a tradition throughout the tournament. Roberto Rocha is producing our coverage, and he was the one that asked Sam Kerr that famous question in the interview. And of course, Sarah Walsh is alongside me for all the, you know, the Twitter shows and the commentary, and she's been terrific to work with. So we're a tight-knit group, and we've been watching as much football as we possibly can.
And that's great to hear. And what did you make of Sam Kerr's comments?
I think they came from the right place. I think people that thought that she was having a go at the football critics missed the point. And she clarified that at a later date. I think there's, you know, in sport, in life, there's no place for the sort of vilification and you know, anger that these athletes face on social media about their sexuality, about anything. You know, it's a very serious issue. And I think Sam Kerr may have looked like she was being flippant when she delivered the message, but she was very serious about the content of the message. And I think that's the important thing to remember. She's got the right to have a relationship and be as open as or as closed as she wants. You know, that's the society we live in. And what she was making was the point that some people don't feel that way, and they make a vociferous point of it in a pretty angry and acidic way on social media. So I think it was a really good stance to make. And this World Cup, Louise and Nick, has been a really good World Cup for bringing up issues in women's football and issues across the board in football. So I think from that point of view, it's been a really, really positive tournament.
Yeah, we were only talking about that last night. It's amazing how many social issues have come up through the tournament.
Yeah, again, I don't know what's happening with France Telecom, but they're not helping me out at the moment. I can hardly hear your questions, but yeah, I think you said you've been mentioning about the issues. I think they've been really important ones for, you know, for the players to raise. And I think, you know, the time for FIFA to have motherhood statements and the soft shoe shuffle of politically correct comment are gone. I think they need to start to invest in the women's game and realise that at the global level, they produce enormous viewing figures. You know, France's opening game against Korea got, I think, very, very close to France's opening match against Australia at the Men's World Cup 12 months previous. So that gives you an idea how much of a viewing public that these matches can attract and the sort of commercial interest. So I think FIFA needs to up the ante with investment. I think some of these, you know, repressive football cultures in South America need to come to the party and start investing in women's football and just giving, you know, giving women who want the opportunity to play professional football every possible chance to represent their country and do it in the right way.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR. We'll let you go and have some breakfast and enjoy the rest of the FIFA Women's World Cup.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, we will. That was SBS's World Cup commentator, David Bashir, joining us there all the way from France. And it is about 9:30 a.m. over there. And as I said, he's probably going to be digging into the croissants. He's getting into all the food over there and just loving life, which, as you should, if you are over there in France enjoying the World Cup.
Of course, can't really complain with that. French summer, enjoying a bit of football, you know, and enjoying all the great things that come with it. Ivan's come through on the comments. It says Sam Kerr now has the same amount of goals as Tim Cahill in a World Cup at 5. So one more and she's the all-time leader. Midfield needs work as well. Yes, you're exactly right, Ivan. We're getting caught out in transition a bit too easily. Definitely something that needs to be rectified heading into the round of 16. And he says he loves Bash's commentary as well, which comes with it along the lines of square, into the area and chance. But look, it's exciting times now for the Matildas heading into the round of 16. But tomorrow morning, there are some big games as we heading closer towards, obviously, the final round of group games. We've got some big games coming in from Nice, Japan taking on England to decide who will top Group D. And Scotland and Argentina basically battling it out for a third place finish at the moment. Scotland still a chance to sneak in. Argentina still a chance to sneak in to the final 16 through the top two, but we'll need England to defeat Japan and a bit of help. And so that's going to really shape up as some massive, massive contests. Obviously, at the moment, Argentina have almost been a bit of the armoured tortoise of this Women's World Cup. Of frustrated teams haven't scored a goal, but have only conceded the one against England in a very frustrating game for the three Lionesses, who were not able to break them down all the way until late in the second half.
Yes, and Phil Neville will be wanting to get one over Japan. But Japan, an interesting country at the moment. They're bringing through a lot of younger players for next year's Olympic Games, and the average age is actually only 24. So that's pretty remarkable. But even more remarkable, get this, 17 players have actually made their World Cup debuts.
Wow.
17.
Crazy. Well, they've managed to get a win and a draw so far, so in a good position to go through. If they can get themselves a point, they're into the round of 16. And basically, if England top the group or Japan, they will be looking set for a quarterfinal game potentially against the Matildas, which would be absolutely massive. The runners-up will take on Netherlands or Canada, whoever comes out on top of Group E, whilst the, obviously we said, the winners will take on the third group place, well, whoever finishes out of, it's very confusing when the third place teams are into it, but it'll be whoever finishes third out of the groups of B, E or F, so potentially a game against China, Cameroon or Chile at the moment.
And if you are just joining us, the Matildas did defeat Jamaica this morning. I'm not sure if you got up and watched it, 5 a.m. A lot of people around Australia did. Take a listen to the highlights if you didn't.
The recipient is Devanna. I saw Lisa Devanna's family just outside the hotel a couple of hours before the match. That's a decent ball. Good header. And it's in. What a goal, Sam Kerr. Second of this FIFA Women's World Cup. A-grade service and an A-grade finish from one of the world's best players.
Well, the left-hand side here is working for the Matildas tonight.
Corey. Good shape to the corner. Kerr! 2-0 Australia. Sam Kerr pops up once more. They've dropped their guard and they've been made to play, Jamaica. Australia in control in Grenoble.
They simply switched off on a throw-in here. No pressure on the ball. A simple pick-up from Katrina Goring.
Does well. Carpenter. Rasso. Carpenter maintains the run. Still, Hayley Rasso drives it in. Sam Kerr! Hat-trick for Australia's darling. And the Matildas have reset in the second half. It's 3-1. Well, it's part of the squad 4 years ago. Plummer. Back to McClure, who makes a gap. And it's the fourth goal for Sam Kerr. An absolute goalkeeping howler has played in Australia's favour. Sam Kerr was onto it very quickly.
Well, look at the press here.
With thanks to SBS, that commentary coming from them, and David Bashir, Sam Kerr scoring four goals. Now the Matildas will face Norway on Sunday at 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time in the knockout stages, hoping to get through to the next round.
Yeah, well, it's a fantastic win for them. Not the most flashy, considering they were tested by a very dogged Jamaican outfit, but Jamaica can hold their heads held high, considering they did a great job in their first ever Women's World Cup appearance.
And managed to score their first goal. So they won't be one of those countries that'll go home without a goal at all.
No, they'll be quite pleased with that. At the end of the day, they'll be looking to build heading into 2023, which could very well be in Australia, hoping, fingers crossed, that they come down here and the Women's World Cup is here. Jamaica, I think that they won a lot of admirers over the three games that they played.
They did indeed. Now, moving on to some of the other topics around world football at the moment, Copa America is being played, and we saw Brazil. They unfortunately were held to a goalless draw by Bolivia.
Venezuela.
But let me tell you that Firmino cost them massively in this game, Nick. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights.
Yeah, well, I was actually watching this game live, and there were two disallowed goals in this one.
Three disallowed goals.
Two in the second half.
Firmino had his hand in all of them.
Yeah, well, the last one was very controversial. Like, it was the smallest of things, and one of them was definitely his fault, but the last one, I think, was very, very harsh. But at the end of the day, Brazil weren't that great. And that's one thing we have to remember.
Why do you say they weren't that great?
Well, they got the changes all wrong. They weren't up for this game whatsoever. Venezuela sat back to frustrate and did exactly what they intended. They did the same thing to Peru. They did exactly the same thing to Brazil. Brazil had a chance to really attack this game, and they didn't. They started with Casemiro and Artur as the two holding mids. Now, just what I don't get is, one thing I really don't like about world football is when you're going for a game and you need to bring attacking players on, but Tite decided to take off Casemiro for another player who plays exactly the same role in Fernandinho when you're going for the game. Now, I understand you don't want to lose shape too much, but when you've got to go for the game, you've got to bring players on, bring themselves into attacking positions. They brought on Gabriel Jesus, they brought on Everton, but why didn't they look at another midfielder who looked to progress the play? An Allen or a Lucas Paqueta or a Willian, someone who's able to run at players. Allen's more box-to-box, who you wouldn't lose too much shape, but he's much more attacking than Fernandinho. And Brazil weren't able to break down Venezuela. And unfortunately for them right now, they put themselves not in the position they'd be hoping to be. They've actually now got to beat Peru in the last game and get top spot in the group and in front of a home crowd which weren't too happy with the result whatsoever. And very well they could have won this game 3-0. But then again, the smallest of intricacies due to VAR has cost them. But then again, though, small little things that they've got to rub out heading into the next game. I think just in terms of what Venezuela did, they succeeded by just parking the bus, frustrating, and they got the job done at the end of the day with a 0-0 draw, which is like a win for them.
What did you make of Firmino, though, starting over Gabriel Jesus?
I'm all for it. Really? Roberto Firmino, for me, is one of the most underrated players in the world. Gabriel Jesus, yep, I see Nick out there, you know, big Liverpool fan out there. Gabriel Jesus didn't have as great of a season as what Roberto Firmino did. Gabriel Jesus is still second fiddle to Sergio Aguero at Man City. Roberto Firmino plays that role which brings other players into the games. What we've seen at Liverpool when he drops in and he allows Salah and Mane to get in behind, brings midfielders into the game. He doesn't have to score your five goals in an international tournament, but he might have about four or five assists. But the way the space he creates for other players is so important to the way this team sets up. You can't change that at all. I think Roberto Firmino is a fantastic player. He probably brings guys like Coutinho, Neres, and Richarlison into the game a lot more than what Gabriel Jesus did. Jesus was okay when he came on, but I think that still Firmino needs to be playing every single game. And he's the future of this team in terms of their attacking setup. He's a guy who's going to be really important for them going forward. And I love how he goes about it. So for me, great move.
Looking elsewhere, Argentina are playing Paraguay tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. How friendly is that for us?
Yep.
But unfortunately, Argentina are bottom of the group, currently on 0 points. What is going on with Argentina?
The same problems that's been going on for Argentina for such a long time.
So nothing's been fixed?
Well, the defence of their midfield is still very open. They've got all the attacking players you want to choose from, but then again, though, they still haven't got it right. You know, it's a fact that they're so still very Messi reliant. As much as you've got Aguero and you've got Dybala and you've got still the likes of Lautaro Martinez and you've got Angel Di Maria and all these other guys, their defence is still very open. Simple as that. They had chances to beat Colombia. They didn't take them. And Colombia, they have a brilliant attacking setup and they just picked up on all the weaknesses that Argentina have. even though Argentina's still got Otamendi and Tagliafico, who are two very good defenders, Petzela and Saravia were opened up time and time again. Their midfield had opened up time and time again. There are still glaring problems for Argentina, which I still think going to be a constant for years to come because it's still a very old Argentina team. Something that's I've been harping on about since the World Cup, that there's a lot of problems and they haven't rectified it. They've changed coaches. And I'm not sold on them. They should bounce back and beat Paraguay tomorrow because Paraguay were very average against Qatar. It was a 2-2 draw in their first game. But I just have this feeling that I could see Argentina dropping out of this tournament very early because when they're going up against some of these other South American teams, they're going to open them up. You know, I don't see them beating a Uruguay. I don't see them beating a Brazil. I don't see them beating Colombia, nor do I even see them beating a Peru, who also got a win this morning against Bolivia. So it's good to see that we've got some other teams coming through, but I just think those glaring weaknesses at the back are going to open up Argentina time and time again.
And you touch on Colombia. They face Qatar tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And what about Qatar? Like, they have just come from winning the Asian Cup now to entry into the Copa America. A very young team. They're building for the FIFA World Cup in 2022.
Well, that's if the World Cup stays there.
Yes.
There's still rumours that apparently it could be on its way out after what happened overnight with Michel Platini. So, but
we'll get to that a little bit later.
Regardless, they probably could still qualify for the World Cup because they've got a very, very good side that, as we did say, won the Asian Cup.
What kind of a message would that send to all of the countries here if they do top Group B?
Well, I don't see them topping Group B, but if they were hypothetically, it would be quite a decent statement that Asian football can't necessarily be, you know, not overlooked in that same sort of way. But Qatar, you know, Al Muez Ali's still kicking along, scoring great goals as he did all Asian Cup. But at the end of the day, I don't see them beating Colombia tomorrow because Colombia are a very, very good side. This is a team that has been up there for so long, ever since about 2014. They've really hit their straps. They've got some really, really top quality players. James, Cuadrado, Muriel, Duvan Zapata, Yerry Mina, Sanchez. The list goes on about the quality this team has. And I just don't see them now under the guidance of Queiroz, the former head coach of Iran, who will know what to expect from Qatar. I don't see them losing this game. I could see Colombia probably topping this group and going very deep in this tournament.
And other games coming later on this week, Uruguay taking on Japan and Ecuador up against Chile. How do you see Japan going against Uruguay, who are looking pretty polished right now?
Japan are a very young team. It's an experimental team, and they're playing arguably one of the best Argentinian teams ever assembled. I can see this being very similar results to what we've seen already. What Japan have copped, a 4-0 loss against Chile, and Uruguay giving Ecuador a 4-0 bath as well. It's not looking good for them because simply they're going with an experimental team wanting to play a lot of young players. They'll learn a lot from this experience over three games. But Uruguay are here to win the tournament. They've got, you look at this starting 11 from what they put out against Ecuador, it's a statement when you've got Godin, Jimenez, Bentancur, Vecino, Suarez, Cavani. It is so, so good. And I just can't see Japan getting anything from this game. The Ecuador-Chile game is also equally important for Ecuador to bounce back. They need to get a win. But Chile, they were good in that game. They're a very old team now, Chile. They're not necessarily the same young blood that they once were now. Obviously, we've still got Alexis Sanchez, Eddie Vargas, Vidal, Gary Medel. They got that 4-0 win. But I still think that, for me, I could see Uruguay coming away with a big win and Chile as well. And either of those two teams will end up topping the group.
And moving on to some of the other news going around in Europe at the moment. Nick, you touched on it. Now, Michel Platini is actually being investigated at the moment because there were questions around why Qatar were awarded the 2022 FIFA World Cup and the decision that he made at the time. How realistic do you think it could be that Qatar will be stripped of their hosting rights?
Don't want to speculate. Like, it could happen, but I don't think it will. I think it's a bit too soon. Like, it's three years out, but it would be a real statement.
A bit too late to strip it.
Yeah, a bit too late. I think if this was maybe 3 or 4 years earlier, maybe they consider it. They've done all the infrastructure. Qualifying's already started. Then again, though, if you want to send a statement, you move it. And I think England, I saw an article about betting markets that England are now moved into a short price favourite to actually host it, which I think if England were to host the World Cup, they have all the stadiums ready. So if you're going to go anywhere, that be in a short-term basis, if you want to move things quick, England being the home of football, I think it would be really a decent move. I think we've got to wait till these investigations, all the legalities all peter over and what they are planning to do and what FIFA are trying to do as a statement. I can't see it moving, but if they want to send a statement to the rest of the world and send a statement to corruption and all these other things, then maybe that's going to be the move. Maybe they've got to move it.
Platini is not technically under arrest. He's just been detained, which means the authorities will decide when he's free to leave after they've questioned him. More on that a bit later on in the week. We'll keep you updated with developments there. We also heard that Frank Lampard is set to be confirmed as Chelsea's new manager.
Yeah, not a fan.
You're not a fan?
Not a fan.
Is it because he hasn't had enough experience at the top level?
Basically. I still think that they, but as much as Maurizio Sarri to Juventus is a great move, Chelsea didn't play hard enough to keep him. And this move is going to come back and it's going to hit them square in the nose. Because the way I see it is, if you're going into a transfer ban and you've got to stick with the same squad that you had last year that was peaking at the right time, Chelsea were playing some great football towards the end of last year and Sarri ball was working at the end. Why didn't they work hard enough to try and at least keep him at the club? I don't know intricacies and everything else about what Juventus were offering compared to what he's earning at Chelsea and everything else. Maybe he wanted to go back to Italy. But to get an inexperienced manager when you're not able to buy, number one, you're not allowed to buy a single player. So they've got to work with what they've got. And on paper at the moment, even if you had all the loan players, it is borderline top four. Borderline. It is not going to win you a title. They've lost their best player and they've lost their coach. You lose Eden Hazard, that position, if it's Christian Pulisic or if it's Willian or Pedro or Hudson-Odoi, whoever it is to come on that other wing, it's not going to do much. Eden Hazard was so good for them last season, one of the best players in world football. And so if they can go and buy Gareth Bale or go and buy another left winger who's going to be able to do that, they've got to work with what they've got. I thought Sarri would have been great because he would have kept the team together, he would have been able to work with them and would have been able to potentially achieve something, maybe overachieve with them because he's worked with them. The tactics can be a little bit more stronger. He can polish it off with a few loan players returning who somewhat know the system and know what they're going to be expecting, especially some of those young guys that would be learning similar philosophies in under-23s, under-21s. So bringing in Lampard, though, I've seen so many clubs throughout time bringing guys that are, you know, they bring in club legends. Club legends, if they're not proven, is a recipe for disaster for a big club like Chelsea. AC Milan did it and have done it every year, almost constantly. Seedorf, Inzaghi, Brocchi, Gattuso. Four club legends whose legacies have all been tarnished simply because they weren't able to get results. As what they did as a player was fantastic, but as a coach, it was stuffed up because they didn't
and
go after experienced managers.
You exactly can't just, right. Even though you played the game at the highest level does not mean you can coach because
exactly.
They're two different things.
Liverpool could have gone and got Steven Gerrard when he was available to go coach them. And, you know, they decided they're not going to go and bite the bullet straight away after he finished. He's gone to Rangers. He's done some great jobs. Maybe in 3 or 4 years' time or whenever Jurgen Klopp moves on or if he moves on ever, Steven Gerrard might be ready then to coach Liverpool because that is being smart. I still even think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not the right manager for Manchester United. I feel like that was a move that maybe Chelsea are looking at and maybe thinking to a degree, well, Ole got results early because they were to pull on the heartstrings and say, yeah, you know, this is real Manchester United. It makes us feel like get the old United going, the passion to play for the jersey. But can Lampard do the same thing? Look, great job with what he did at Derby last season. But you're going from the Championship to the Premier League and you're not like you're coaching...
Worlds apart.
It's not like you're coaching Sheffield United or Norwich or a recently promoted team or a Southampton. You're coaching Chelsea. You're in the Champions League. You've got Prem. You're going to have high expectations. And I was talking about this with Josh last week on Lightning Round. He said straight up, the expectations will lower. No, they won't. Chelsea fans, and they've had one thing that's been a constant ever since... For years, they've recycled managers every year. Mourinho, Conte, go back to Di Matteo, Ancelotti, the list goes on. In my opinion, that the Chelsea fans will be wanting success early. They're not going to be wanting to sit back and have a year where they're going to be playing Europa League. No one wants to play Europa League at the end of the day. You want to be playing top four. If they don't make the top four and Lampard comes in, he's going to get culled straight away. And unfortunately...
Or will they be a little bit more sympathetic
well,
with
that's
him,
the question. Is Roman Abramovich going to be the Roman Abramovich that he
I
has been for 15 years?
There's no track record for Lampard.
There isn't, no.
He's as you say, played in the Championship, but he hasn't played in the big boys league with all the, you know, in the top flight. Basically,
well, yeah, he hasn't coached in there yet.
In the EPL. So he's got nothing to go off. He... really hasn't been at the helm for very long. You touch on he's got a transfer ban. Could more players follow Sarri to Juventus? That's another big question. What happens if that happens?
I don't think I could see many leaving, if any at all.
What about two key players?
Well, I think the only one I could see leaving that Sarri might take would be Jorginho, because Jorginho loves Sarri
and has
Sarri
followed
loves
him everywhere.
Jorginho. Well, Sarri, the way Sarri plays Sarri boys, he wants a player like Jorginho and everything works around Jorginho. He even shafted N'Golo Kante from his most preferred position to cater for Jorginho. But then again, though, he might look at Juventus and say, well, I've got guys like Bentancourt, I've got Pjanic, I've got Ramsey, I've got Khedira, I've got Matuidi, someone who can play a similar role. He might not be desperate. So Jorginho might stay for a bit, and then Sarri might say, well, maybe down the track we'll get him along. But I can't see Chelsea losing too many other players that would actually want to leave, because there isn't... Marcos Alonso might be on the way out, but they've got Emerson Palmieri. He's done a great job as a left-back. I thought he's done really, really well in the time that he's been there. He's now in the Italian national team playing every week. They've got guys still in there that are good. Like, don't get me wrong, on squad, like this squad on paper is still okay. But remember, they're losing Mateo Kovacic as well in midfield. So you're going to have Jorginho, Kante, and a big gap. Is Ross Barkley going to fill that gap? I don't think so. Are you going to have David Luiz and Rudiger, who were an open door all season in centre-back, hold the fort? Mm. Probably not. So who's going to score the goals? Is Giroud going to score you goals? Who's going to fill the 16-goal gap that Eden Hazard left in the Premier League?
Someone's going to have to step up.
Is Pedro going to do it? Probably not. Is Willian? No, they're getting older now. Is Callum Hudson-Odoi ready? Not ready to take that sort of mantle. Neither is Pulisic. So that's when they almost have to go to all those loanees. They're going to have to start fishing through and think, all right, who's going to actually be part of this team? And it comes back to one person in particular they've got to play, and that's Tammy Abraham. They've got to give him a prolonged crack in this team because they've got no one else.
He was on loan to Villa, was it?
Yeah, or... and he had a great season. Every team he has gone to, he has performed. So now it's time to get him in there, potentially lock him in as the number nine, if it's him or Giroud, or if he's coming off the bench or whatever else, and just give him a crack for this period of time, because Morata's going on another season. They've lost Higuain, who's then they can't sign permanently. Mishi Batshuayi hasn't worked out for them. So put your faith in the youngsters, Abraham, Mounts, James, these guys, and they will get the job done to a degree that at least you give the Chelsea fans something to look forward to in the future. So you could say, all right, beyond this season, we've got something to build towards. If they don't do that and they don't give these young guys an opportunity, I'm sorry, but this is going to be a long season for Chelsea fans.
We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But while we are in the EPL, Manchester United's midfielder Paul Pogba has reportedly given priority to Juventus now.
Yeah, well, I really don't blame him. I really don't blame him, because
we know that he will eventually leave Manchester United. He has actually come out and said that he wants to go. But do you think Juventus, how does Juventus cater for Paul Pogba in that squad?
They will throw the kitchen sink at Paul Pogba. Let me tell you that, Louise. They will throw the kitchen sink if Paul Pogba wants to come back.
Who do they make way for, though? And what happens to Dybala as well? Can we see him heading up?
Dybala will stay if he does. And I think Dybala fits into the Maurizio Sarri system better than any player in that Juventus team, because Sarri prefers playing with a false nine and prefers playing with a guy who's not your traditional number nine. At Napoli, he worked so well with Dries Mertens as a false nine, sort of came in and played that role, and Dybala suits that perfectly. So they don't have to go out and buy a striker. They can still play Ronaldo out wide and Bernardeschi, or if they sign Chiesa, whoever it might be. And then you've got Pogba in that midfield, and Pogba and Dybala are great mates. We must not forget that they had a dynamic partnership in that season that they were together. If Pogba wants to go back to Juventus, Maurizio Sarri and Juventus will make it happen. There is no doubt about it, and I think that will work a long way in their favour to keeping a guy like Paulo Dybala at the club. If they're going to say, if Sarri's going to go, all right, Dybala's going to become the new number nine and going to lead us into the future, because I think that front line is going to be really, really exciting. And I think Juventus next season, when I look at this team, and I think if they get Pogba, if they sign Federico Chiesa, this team is very well now ready to win a Champions League. There is no doubt about it. They've got maybe, you know, if it's Szczesny or Pedin and goals, you've got Cancelo, Bonucci, if they sign Matty DeLitt as well. Mate, this team's going to be unbelievable. They're going to have Alexandro and they've got Ramsey's coming
on
a free.
Well, there'll be really no excuses.
There's no
more
excuses.
If they have that team, there is absolutely no excuses to not win a UEFA Champions League. And let me tell you, Cristiano Ronaldo will be, you know, basically breaking out the door to make sure that they do.
Yeah.
And anything else, he will be out of Juventus. I don't
Ronaldo won't leave Juventus, Louise.
If they don't win a Champions League in the second season that he's there, do you think he'll stay around for another season?
He'll stick around. Where else is he going to go? Who else is going to pay that sort of wages? Because he won't want to go anywhere else till he conquers Champions League in Italy. Let me tell you that. That is Cristiano Ronaldo.
I don't know.
He was pretty upset
when they exited the tournament.
Yeah, but he's been
an emotional figure
his whole career. When he was a little kid, when he was playing like at his 18 and 19, he was very emotional as well.
But realistically, when should Ronaldo win the UEFA Champions? How much time should
Ronaldo's
you give
34,
him
35 now,
to
so
win it with Juventus?
He's got two more seasons. Two more seasons, and then he might be moved on. He might go to the MLS or something like
that. Let's say he doesn't win it this coming season.
He stays around.
And should he win it by the third?
He wins it by the third, then he can move on. He's done his job. End of the day, Juventus are ready. They just faced an Ajax team that were motivated, and they didn't have the few other players they needed. They thought they were ready, but they were a few more players off getting to that point. They didn't have the depth. If this side, and the thing is, the Allegri tactics didn't work in the Champions League. It's a whole other discussion, but Sarri's tactics in the Champions League with these players, Pogba comes in and they work Dybala into that team and they sign Matty De Ligt. Let me tell you that this Juventus team will be very, very hard to beat. They'll win the Serie A again, no question, and they'll very well be probably the scariest team you want to come up against in the Champions League. And you know what game?
I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
The one game that I want to see, that I would love to see Juventus come up against the Champions League, I want to see Juventus versus Liverpool, because that is a clash of two great styles, very similar styles in Klopp and Sarri, with two brilliant teams going head-to-head. That match shapes up five-star blockbuster game in any stadium around the world. And you know what? I think that could very well be a Champions League final matchup if they sign Pogba, if they sign Matty De Ligt, and if they manage to find a way to cater Dybala as that number nine. Because if they decide not to and they decide to cater around Ronaldo playing as a number nine, not put him out on the left, you're underutilizing one of the best talents in world football, and that is Paulo Dybala.
Yeah, and he was basically not utilized much in the season that's just gone.
He was shafted.
He was.
And unfortunately, that's what happened working in the Massimiliano Allegri system.
And you touch on De Ligt, the Ajax defender, has reportedly turned down an offer made from Barcelona, saying it's unsatisfactory. Now, that opens the door to Juventus, PSG, and also Bayern Munich. And you think that Juventus could be the main preference?
Well, Juventus do need centre-backs. Bonucci's not getting any younger. Chiellini's not getting any younger. Barzagli's just retired. Martin Caceres is still hanging around. They need defenders. So I think they're going to go all out for Matty De Ligt and make things really interesting.
Welcome to Northern Motor Group.
We go. Sorry about that.
We've also heard that Barcelona are looking to pursue Neymar after Messi has actually reported and asked for him to come back.
Yeah, well, Neymar would be a really good move to go back to Barcelona. I think that they should move everything to get him back there. I think that he's the missing cog in that front three with Suarez and Messi and could very well push them back up the Champions League pedestal and put them right back in the hunt to win it next season.
Now, quick question before we go. Let's just say that Juventus team, Pogba goes over, De Ligt goes over, takes on that Barcelona team with
Juventus
Neymar.
Juventus wins.
You think Juventus
still wins? If Valverde's still there, Juventus wins.
Okay. Well, there you go. I'll hold you to that, Nick, if that happens.
It'll happen. Juventus will win.
Thank you for joining me here in the studio. We'll see you at the same time again tomorrow.